It's Saturday, March 5th, 1910, and over 2,000 people have gathered around the plant of the Buffalo Dry Dock Company to witness a brand new ship being launched. As the clock strikes three, Mrs. Edward Smith, the wife of the company's president, ascends the steps of a platform erected at the bow of the new ship. The crowd's encouraging cheers come to a halt as Mrs. Smith lays her hand on the ship's nose and utters a single word: Canadiana. For the next 46 years, the Canadiana would escort passengers from Buffalo just across the border to Canada's Crystal Beach Amusement Park, making the hour-long trip up to six times per day. Traveling aboard the ship quickly became a tradition for Western New Yorkers as they strolled her promenades, listened to her big band performances, and showed off their moves on her dance floor. The Canadiana was designed by naval architect Frank E. Kirby, regarded by many as being among the best ship designers in all of American history. Once finished, Kirby's ship cost nearly $250,000 and measured 216 feet from bow to stern with a 45-foot beam. At that size, its owner, the Lake Erie Excursion Company, had ample space for up to 3,500 passengers, though the U.S. Coast Guard felt that 1,800 was probably a more manageable number. Below deck, her triple expansion engines, six watertight bulkheads, four trimming tanks, and four boilers ensured that the Canadiana could deliver her passengers safely to and from their destinations, no matter the weather. And where did the name come from, you ask? Well, like many things in history, including our beloved Buffalo Bills, it was chosen through a naming contest. The winning entry was submitted by Carmilla M. Boland of Buffalo. In return for her creativity, she was awarded $10 and a season's pass to Crystal Beach. Finishing in second and third places were the Britannia and the United Shores. On June 30th, 1910, at 2:45 p.m., a sunny Thursday afternoon, the steamer Canadiana pulled away from the foot of Main Street on her maiden voyage. On board, over 2,000 guests of the Lake Erie Excursion Company took in the elegance of their new ship as they shuttled at a leisurely pace across the water. After arriving in Canada, passengers were given an hour ashore before making their return trip. Now, the Canadiana wasn't the only passenger ferry operating out of Buffalo. In fact, she had a sister ship, the Americana, that had been built just 2 years earlier. Crystal Beach was a popular attraction during the summer months, after all, and in the days prior to the construction of the Peace Bridge and widespread automobile ownership, this was the way to get there. It was the construction of the Peace Bridge in 1927 that led to the demise of the Americana. With roughly 1 in 6 Americans owning a car and a shiny new bridge to drive them over, Buffalo simply didn't need 2 passenger ferries any longer. The Americana was sold in 1929. She'd spent her final years off New York City, carrying passengers from Battery Park to New Jersey's Rye Beach. As the only ship remaining, the Canadiana became casually known as the Crystal Beach Boat and worked its way into the hearts of Western New Yorkers. She was a stately ship, featuring Victorian architecture, stained glass windows, cabins finished in rich mahogany, and over 1,008 candle power lights. To many, she was the ultimate in luxury and pleasure. As years passed, the Canadiana became synonymous with Buffalo's long, hot summer days, inextricably imprinting itself into the memories of countless Western New Yorkers who would, for years, reminisce about their experiences on board. As I recall, wrote Buffalo News contributor George J. Koons, who rode the ship as a child, the first boat left from the foot of Commercial Street at 10 a.m. Once aboard, we began our annual boat ride ritual. We walked along the first deck to see the engine room. Ever immaculate, hot, and smelling of lubricant, the boilers were a masterwork of efficiency. Huge pistons began to move, and we could hear the swish of moving water as the boat pulled away from Buffalo. My mother, with our lunch basket, by this time would be stationed sedately in a cane-seated chair on the second deck. This was our base. Here we would meet if we lost one another. Meanwhile, we wildly explored the boat. We chased one another up flights fore and aft and ran along the extended third deck and down the stairway to an enclosed, wood-paneled second deck room where old people gathered. Here, a certain decorum prevailed, and we slowed our pace accordingly. Behind this room, music played and a few couples danced. The boat ride lasted about 45 minutes, and that was enough. We had had our fill of darting across the boat by then, and anyway, once Crystal Beach came into view, everything else lost its luster. Not every memory formed aboard the Canadiana was pleasant, however, and in the late spring of 1956, events aboard the ship would forever attach themselves to her memory. That year, beach season started off just as any other. Children in classrooms throughout the city waited impatiently for school clocks to ring and declare their summer freedom. Soon, they'd be steaming the short ride across Lake Erie with their friends and families and playing games along the park's mile-long midway. At Crystal Beach, there was a lot to be excited about. After all, this year marked the park's 65th anniversary, and there'd be two new rides. The Roader, a large barrel which pinned its riders against the walls using centrifugal force, and the Roundup, a sort of sideways spinning Ferris wheel. Together, the rides cost park management more than $80,000. That's nearly $1 million today. There was also the brand new Crystal Palace roller skating rink, the largest rink within 300 miles, and a $55,000 bingo hall still under construction. Crystal Beach Amusement Park's general manager, Fillmore Hall, was anxious for his guests to arrive that summer, eager for them to take in all the new additions and gauge their reactions. In the days leading up to the park's Memorial Day weekend opening, Hall had a crew of over 100 carpenters, electricians, mechanics, painters, laborers, and maintenance personnel swarming over the park grounds to ensure its readiness. Opening weekend went off without a hitch. Hall and his workers could breathe a sigh of relief as they headed into summer. On Wednesday, May 30th, the Canadiana steamed from its Commercial Street dock in Buffalo toward Fort Erie, just as it had any other day. But this ride, this whole day, in fact, would be markedly different. Aboard the triple-decked ship, groups of teenagers began to instigate one another and tempers began to flare. The situation deteriorated further when the Canadiana docked at Crystal Beach. Outside the park's main gate, the rowdy teens hurled bottles at each other, which led to fistfights and ultimately 9 arrests. Park staff and security, overwhelmed by the escalating situation, called in Ontario Provincial Police from nearby Port Colborne, Waynefleet, and Niagara Falls, 40 officers in all, who confiscated a total of 7 knives from the teens. Among those involved in the altercation, 4 were white and 5 were African American. Fillmore Hall, Crystal Beach's general manager, stated to police that, quote, "the disturbance wasn't a race riot." However, Ontario Police Corporal J.E. Leggett strongly disagreed, stating that, in his opinion, the fights were racially motivated. That evening, after a long day in the sun, hundreds of Western New Yorkers boarded the Canadiana for their return trip to Buffalo, and that's when trouble sparked up once again, with teens re-engaging each other violently throughout the ship. Unfortunately for those on board, there were no police to maintain order. Looking back upon that night in a 1980 Buffalo News article, historian Mike Vogel noted that there was no police jurisdiction between the shores, other than that of the boat's crew and a few security officers. Violence flared again, turning the voyage into what one reporter termed, quote, a nightmare, in which teenagers with ripped clothing cowered below decks while lightning split the skies outside, illuminating the marauding gangs. Back in Buffalo, a team of nightstick-wielding Buffalo police officers stood at the ready to defuse any further violence. They arrested three additional assailants who had been taken into custody by the ship's crew and handed over. Six other passengers, collateral damage of the fights, were taken to local hospitals where they were treated for minor injuries. In the wake of the incident, politicians and social agencies around the city pondered how to quell the racial violence. Community leaders met with Buffalo Mayor Stephen Pankow, hoping to find ways to avoid future outbreaks. The FBI even opened an investigation into the case, as did the NAACP, the State Commission Against Discrimination, the Youth Bureau, and the Board of Community Relations. Across the border, Crystal Beach management made some changes as well, upping their security personnel in the park from 8 to 13. Provincial police in the area also boosted their numbers from 5 to 8 men. Additionally, the Canadiana's owners would be more mindful to whom they sold tickets, reserving the right not to allow, quote, troublesome-looking people on board. The Canadiana wouldn't see any more violence upon her decks, but it wasn't due to any increased security or lack of racial tension. Later that same year, right after Thanksgiving, the Crystal Beach Transit Company announced that the ship would be retired from its traditional run. The era of the steam passenger ferry in Buffalo had come to an end, slowly brought to its knees both by the construction of the Peace Bridge and the rising rates of automobile ownership. After 46 years of service and an estimated 18 million passengers, the Canadiana was leaving town. The ship would head to Michigan, where it would take on the Toledo to Detroit summer run. That gig wouldn't last long, however. In May of 1958, the ship was badly damaged after colliding with a swinging railroad bridge. It then found its way to Cleveland, where it ended up in the hands of entrepreneur Diamond Jim Vinci, who wanted to turn her into a motel and showboat. Diamond Jim's best-laid plans would never come to fruition. They'd end up the victims of governmental red tape, ungodly expensive restoration costs, and an unfortunate electrical incident which caused her to sink up to her first deck in the Cuyahoga River. There she sat for 18 months. But for the ship that captured the hearts of so many, this was not the end. It was the end for Diamond Jim, however. In 1985, he and his assistant were found dead, shot twice in the back of the head, execution style, in a likely mob hit. In early 1984, a group of motivated Buffalonians dedicated to preserving her memory put together a plan to bring the estranged ship back home. The group, known as the Friends of the Canadiana, eventually purchased the ship for $15,000. Much of the funding crowdsourced from like-minded citizens. Now, I'll note that the formal kickoff for the effort was held right here at the Buffalo History Museum on May 9, 1984. In mid-September of 1984, the Canadiana made her way back to Buffalo from Ohio. Not under her own power, of course, but pulled by a tugboat and accompanied by a flotilla of onlookers. The Friends of the Canadiana had spent weeks making temporary repairs so the aging ship could endure her return voyage. Still, she was in worse shape than many had imagined. As one reporter for the Buffalo News noted, the 216-foot steamship stack was gone. Her windows gaped blindly. Her paint was scabby, her metal was rusty. The railing on her top deck was hanging down over the second deck. A few weeds were growing from her lower deck, probably nourished by some mud from the Cuyahoga River. Now, back home, the ship was docked in shallow lake water along Furman Boulevard as teams of volunteers worked to clear debris from her decks. Men, women, even Boy Scouts came to help, ferried out into the water to board the old steamer. The Buffalo News dedicated a page to the effort and featured a number of photos. They show volunteers wielding crowbars, dismantling walls, and using shovels to scoop what was once the ship's grand dance floor. The images reveal her for what she now was, a ship in disrepair, a shell of her former self, but perhaps primed for a second act. Facing a large but at this point unknown restoration price, the Friends of the Canadian have found inspiration for their cause in another historic ship, the Niagara, which was undergoing restoration work of her own. The Niagara was the flagship of Master Commander Oliver Hazard Perry's fleet during the War of 1812. Well, she became the flagship after his first one, the Lawrence, was battered and disabled by her British counterparts during the Battle of Lake Erie. Nonetheless, supporters of both projects adopted the cry of Perry's battle flag, "Don't give up the ship." Throughout the summer and fall of 1985, volunteers removed an estimated 200 tons of debris from the ship, everything from mud and mattresses to walls and flooring. Now she was sitting a few inches higher in the water and ready for a fresh coat of gleaming white paint. Hundreds had helped clear the ship. Thousands more came to tour her in events hosted by Friends of the Canadiana to raise both money as well as awareness for the project. And raise awareness they did. Paul Redding, president of the group, worked tirelessly to promote their efforts through meetings, newspapers, and TV interviews. At Cheektowaga's Apple Tree Mall, the Friends of the Canadiana even held a moonlight dance fundraiser to evoke romantic memories of the ship. They even came up with a professionally recorded jingle for local airwaves. M&A's, the longtime Buffalo department store, hopped on the Canadiana bandwagon as well, selling ship-shaped trinkets dubbed Canadiana keepsakes. In August of 1986, an engineering study determined that to make the Canadiana a fully functioning passenger vessel once again, it would cost north of $4 million. The major work would be in the ship's wooden superstructure, which would have to be completely dismantled and replaced with aluminum to conform with Coast Guard safety regulations. Should the Friends of the Canadiana opt to pursue the lesser goal of turning the ship into a static museum, that too would be a costly venture, perhaps up to $1 million. Ultimately, the group decided to pursue the full rebuild rather than simply give the beloved ship a facelift. And with that decision, the Friends of the Canadiana continued to strip the ship down to her bones in order to rebuild the hull. However, despite soaring enthusiasm for the project, financial challenges were mounting. Insurance coverage alone had reached nearly $1,000 a month, causing many to worry about the reality of finishing the project. In the fall of 1987, it was determined that in order to rebuild the ship properly, it would have to be done in dry dock. Buffalo was ill-equipped for such an undertaking, and it was decided that she'd have to be floated once more and towed to Port Colborne, Ontario. On Saturday, July 23, 1988, a gathering of 75 people watched as two tugboats escorted the Canadiana into open water. It's the same kind of thrill you got as a kid when you saw it come into shore or head out to the lake, one onlooker observed. You have to have an imagination. You have to imagine what it was like years ago. It used to be spectacular. Unfortunately for Western New Yorkers, their imaginations, as it turned out, would have to be sufficient to recall the Canadiana in her former glory. Despite the tireless efforts of her supporters, fundraising efforts for her restoration failed. highlighted by the 1996 revocation of a previously allocated $400,000 state grant, undone because the ship didn't meet historic guidelines to qualify for the National Register of Historic Places. By 2004, the resurrection of the Canadiana had come to an unceremonious ending. After spending a decade in an Ontario dry dock, the ship was scrapped, along with the hopes and dreams of so many. Perhaps the fate of the project had been destined to fail. Perhaps it was simply too large an undertaking. Maybe too much time had passed and the golden years of the Canadiana had faded too much from our minds. On Labor Day weekend in 1989, Crystal Beach Amusement Park itself closed, and her rides and equipment were auctioned off the following month. Today, the area has been redeveloped into a gated community called the Crystal Beach Tennis and Yacht Club, along with a public beach called the Crystal Beach Waterfront Park. Only the pier alongside which the Canadiana would dock remains. In the Everybody's column of the Buffalo News on July 31, 1985, a contributor named Jack Casey wrote, quote, "Trying to rebuild the Canadiana is like trying to rebuild those golden memories of yesteryear. Like our youth, they're gone. Gone in a distant time and place that is no more." Today's episode of the Buffalo History Museum podcast was researched, written, and produced by me, Anthony Greco. Thank you all for listening, and if you like what you hear, be sure to share the podcast with your family and friends. Also, be sure to rate us and leave us a review. Now, it's been a few months since we've had a new episode, but we've got a number of great stories lined up for you. So stay tuned, and we'll be back in a few weeks with our next episode. The Buffalo History Museum receives operating support from Erie County, the City of Buffalo, the New York State Council on the Arts with the support of Governor Kathy Hochul, and the New York State Legislature. Additional support is provided by M&T Bank and from our donors, members, and friends.